This is Recruiting Daily's Recruiting Live Podcast, where we look at the strategies behind the world's best talent acquisition teams. We talk recruiting, sourcing, and talent acquisition. Each week, we take one overcomplicated topic and break it down so that your three-year-old can understand it. Make sense? Are you ready to take your game to the next level? You're at the right spot. You're now entering the mind of a hustler. Here's your host, William Tincup.
This is William Tincup. You're listening to the Recruiting Daily Podcast. Today we have Amy from ADP on, and this is a part two. So, the myths of great leaders, part two. We did this podcast, I think it was last week or the week before, and we didn't get through the list. So, we basically said, well, we got to do a part two. That rarely happens. In my podcast, so I'm really glad to kind of get to part two. So, Amy, would you do us a favor and introduce yourself and what you do for ADP?
Absolutely. Hi, everybody. I am Amy Leschke-Carl. I'm the Vice President of Talent Insights and Innovation, and I help organizations think about work differently and do work differently, which is why we're having a part two today, and particularly around the very important topic of leaders.
So let's start off with the expectations of leaders. Like where are we at kind of at this particular moment in time as we look for leaders to do X, Y, and Z? Is it realistic? Is it optimistic, pessimistic? What's when you look at expectations and leaders, what do you see with your clients and yourself and across the market?
One of the things I see certainly with clients, but also all of us who lead people, whether we show up on an org chart or not, by the way, is that organizations have over time over expected of leaders. We've overwhelmed leaders, especially the everyday leader, those of us who are not necessarily super passionate about leading teams of people. We love to do our work. And oh, by the way, now we have to do this thing called leading people. We've put so many expectations, both administrative expectations as well as coaching expectations, that most of us as leaders, we want to do work, but now we've got all this leady stuff to do as well. And a lot of that is not super helpful, again, for those of us who are, I'm going to say, everyday leaders.
Right. So we're, if I could point blame, an assigned blame. Where did this go sideways?
Well, I think it's all very well intended. So no one, like we don't, for the most part, well intended. I think sometimes HR doesn't want to do things. And so we point at leaders and say, oh, you go do that thing. But I think for the most part, it's well intended. And we have this, I'm going to say, unrealistic expectation that everybody can be an extraordinary leader. Like, you know, if we give right. everybody enough training, if we give Amy enough training, she can be an extraordinary leader. And I don't think that's the case. And I think that is an unrealistic expectation. So we've overwhelmed leaders with stuff to do, with tasks, with approaches, with models, with frameworks that for most of us, we simply don't have enough, I'm going to say, affinity for the work of leading people. It's not, by the way, that we say we hate leading people. We all right. know how important it is, but it's just not a natural affinity enough for us to go, I'm going to overinvest in being a really good leader.
So are we thinking about extraordinary in the sense of, say, the 1% like that, or should we shoot for extraordinary with some, but not with all? Like, we should then have people that are just capable leaders, like competent leaders. Maybe you don't have to be, maybe you're never going to be extraordinary, but you know, it seems like there's a utility, or could be a utility, if someone is just competent in leading.
Absolutely. And we can gain so much in organizations by having our leaders be at least proficient. I like to use the word proficient.
Right.
And it's incredibly doable. Like, getting all of your leaders to proficient is an absolutely realistic expectation. And we know from the data and the research that there's a really simple practice that all proficient leaders do. You and I think I'm sure have talked about this before. And that proficient practice is paying really frequent attention to your team members.
Mm-hmm.
That just get everyone being a high attention leader. That means once a week, it doesn't have to be a big, long, complicated thing. It's asking three simple questions. What is the most important thing you need to work on this week? Do you need anything from me? And I just want to check in and see if you're doing okay. Those three questions once a week, we see in the data from real people doing real work in the real world, is a game changer when it comes to helping your team members be all in. So if you instill and embed that practice in your organization as an expectation, that gets everybody to proficiency. The other thing that that does is it gives you the space and the time, and I might even say budget, to overinvest in those people who are passionate about leading others, because right. We need them. We want some of them. You're never going to have all of them. So it's just like if you are an engineer, I'm an engineer. And if you're an engineer, let's say you're a mechanical engineer and you really love designing in CAD, but you also, there's also this quality thing over there, but you don't really care so much about being a quality engineer, but you love to design. You can invest a whole bunch of time and effort and money and emotional energy into helping someone be a better quality engineer, but that's not where their passion is.
Right.
Why would we do that? We want to help them be a really good designer.
It's like we're forcing them to be something that they're not or don't want to be or Absolutely. Have no interest into. How do you, first of all, I think ADP follows this proficiency model, or excuse me, the high attention, because I think I was talking to one of you, it was another executive, and we went into kind of his world. He's like, hey, listen, I have a team of six people. I talk to every single one of them every week. And so he explained exactly what you were talking about. I don't know if he used the questions in the way you did. I'm like, dude, that just sounds awesome. I mean, that just, it reminds me of what Jack Welch used to do at GE with the span of control, and just basically one person should really only interact with a limited number of people. Like you can talk to a lot of other folks, but managing, it should be more limited than that. But I like that model, and I like those questions a lot. Do you, with your customers, do you see them asking, like, how do we know we've reached proficiency?
The beautiful thing about, the beautiful thing about technology is we can actually measure it and we can see that. So we ask, for example, in our world at ADP and with our clients, every week, we each of us answer a question that said, did your team leader connect with you about your priorities this week? Yes or no? So we know.
That's awesome.
It's beautiful.
It's probably terrifying to implement for a company that's never done that. I could see where people would be like, oh, no, that's horrible. But once it's done and it's ritualized, then I think people get addicted to it. It's like, okay, yeah, yeah.
And well, and it's not terrifying though, William, because the question feels so innocuous. It feels like, right. Oh, yes or no. It's a yes or no question. It's like, oh, yes or no. Like, did they pay attention to you or not? Yes or no.
Yeah.
But it gives us this data point to be able to connect some dots at a person level from a researchy perspective. We don't like share all the data with everybody, but from a research perspective, applied research perspective, we can connect a couple pieces of data, like how engaged is that person? How often did their team leader connect with them? What did their priorities look like? Did they like working on their priorities that week, or did they not like working on their priorities this week? So
is
we can collect this data in a 5-minute process, and it's amazing.
Is that linked either now or in the future to promotions and comp and succession planning and things like that?
I would not link those two things together.
Okay. Why I went down that road is bad managers. And that's the only reason that my mind went over into that little dark corner. It was like, okay, what do we do with bad leaders? We got the data now. And we even might even see someone that's, you know, doing a great job communicating, and then their subordinate doing a fantastic job. It's like, okay, we can connect these dots. But that's how I got there, as bad managers. So that's the only reason I brought it up.
Yeah. And I think it's another probably topic for a podcast about poor performers.
Right.
What exactly is a poor performer? How do we know? And the thing that we typically, as practitioners and talent practitioners, don't do a great job at delving into is why.
Right.
like, why is this person get a 2 on their performance? However, we've talked about this before, but why do they get a 2 on their performance rating? And we'll just keep it really generic. Why? Is it because perhaps they have something going on outside of work? Is it perhaps they've got bad chemistry with their boss? I mean, my God, we're humans, right? Sometimes things we don't gel very well, and you've got a really good, very competent, well-intended employee, but they're in a situation in work where there's some friction, I'm going to call it friction, with someone maybe on their team or their team leader, and we're not giving them the opportunity to do their best work. So I think that's why I get a little like a squeamy when you talk about that. Oh, yeah. Is I think we make some assumptions around why things happen, and we don't really know, and we don't get curious enough to go dig in and find out what's really happening.
So what's beyond, if the goal is every leader proficient, and here's how we can get there, and we have the data to support those things. Do you have another level past proficient?
Extraordinary.
Okay, so we go from proficient to extraordinary.
Absolutely. And the way that happens, again, is I'm just going to say kind of affinity, natural affinity. I don't know what else to call it.
Right.
And you know those people. I mean, maybe you're one of them. I am not, by the way. I am not that person who has a natural affinity for leading others. It's just not in me. It's not something I've been doing. Like, I've been spending most of my career in the world of leader development. And interestingly, I'm not super passionate about being a leader myself. I'm really interested about what does great leader and extraordinary leadery stuff look like, and how do we help people get there? And what I have learned is that not everybody's going to get there. So from a practitioner perspective, one thing I always guide folks that I work with to think about is be really smart and almost like surgical about where you invest and who you invest in, because you could overinvest in Amy and my, you know, to try to get me to be an extraordinary leader, but you're never going to get payback on that because it's just not who I am. I am a incredibly proficient leader.
Right.
And it's okay to stop there. Like expectation that every leader in our organization is going to be extraordinary, or that every bank teller is going to be extraordinary, or every podcast host is going to be extraordinary. That is completely unrealistic. And we don't all need to be extraordinary. That's the thing. When we are extraordinary in those places where we do have emotional affinity, where we do get really excited about, overinvest in that place. It doesn't mean we don't do other things proficiently.
You know,
but helping people steer towards those places that we get, like, you can tell I'm getting super excited about the topic. It's like, we need to be smarter at investing. And I don't mean just money. I mean time and effort and emotional energy to help people have extraordinary and give extraordinary contribution to the organizations that they work for.
So I've struggled with this for years in terms of putting all A players on a team. So again, a proficient and maybe even an extraordinary leader, and everyone on the team is a high performer. It's a talent. I'm not sure that works. And I mean, you're a leader in this field, so you probably have a better response to that. But I've always struggled with it. And I say always, probably the last 20 years, I've struggled with this. It's like you need some B and C players on the team. You don't need to have all A. In fact, from a sports perspective, there's not a lot of sports teams where all of the team were all, A talent. You had to have, it actually worked because you didn't have everyone as A talent. Like in basketball, there's only one basketball, everyone's got a role. Not everyone has to be Michael Jordan. So first of all, tear that apart. I don't mind.
I'm going to tear that apart.
As you should.
Why do we not have the approach that all of our teams should be full of A players? And to your point, what you just said, the thing that I would tear apart about that is that, let's just say, I'm not a basketball person, so I may get these words wrong, but let's say you've got 5 people on the court. That person who's the star and making all the baskets and the 3-pointers and all those kind of things, that's great. They're a highly visible A player. But that person who's supporting them and ensuring that they get the ball to be able to score that, they are a player in a supporting role.
In like what they do.
So I think the expectation and even the labeling of we have A players and B players, or you may even think about the nine box, right? It's like, right. Some of those people that are sitting in the middle. I don't think so. I mean, yeah, you're going to have them for different reasons, but we ought to have an expectation. And I think a lot of organizations actually have this. They just don't want to talk about it in this way because we don't think about human performance as we think about variation. And sometimes variation is not necessarily in the contribution we make, but variation is in the, you have a skill and a talent and a strengths, and I have a different one than you do. Why wouldn't we have organizations? And I think a lot of organizations actually have this where everybody is up in that top right-hand corner.
Yeah. I can see that now. I can see the way that you've reframed it. We don't need everybody to shoot. We need them to be good, extraordinary, or proficient at what they do. So that actually tracks for me. That makes sense. Two questions. One is, traits of extraordinary leaders. What have you seen? Is there anything in the data that you can look at and say, okay, these gals and these guys, they have this, or these five things, or whatever it is. Is there anything in the data that says, you know, the difference between proficient and extraordinary is these things?
It's actually exactly the opposite. There is no commonality.
Damn it.
The most extraordinary leaders find their own unique extraordinary leader model approach, and they do that. Trying to force fit yourself into someone else's imaginary model makes us not better leaders. It makes us more frustrated and probably not as good of leaders as we could be.
Well, it also could show up as false positives too. So they scored well on this. So anyway, if we think that that's the thing that makes an extraordinary leader, that we could spend time, money, and energy and all that other stuff trying to make them an extraordinary leader, and they're never going to get there. And then that creates, like we're talking about from the org's perspective, but it creates a whole lot of frustration for the leader itself, because they can't, for whatever reason, or don't want to reach that level or that place. And that can create a whole kind of watershed of problems with morale and retention and all kinds of stuff.
It's incredibly limiting to opportunity in the organization. Letting people show up as their own unique best self, not their own unique best self, like, you know, in their entire life, but their own unique best work self, but helping people to figure out what that looks like and how to bring that to the table, and whether this is true, whether they're a people leader or not, is freeing not only for the organization, but for the employees. Again, think about what the unique differentiator of every organization is in today's world. It used to be technology, not quite as much anymore. It's still somewhat differentiating. It used to be process optimization, not anymore. Mm-hmm. It's the people who are doing the thing, that is.
That's right.
And we're all unique.
Which it should have always been, but we'll side issue for a later apparent point. But you're right. It's the people.
And we're all different and unique. And if we can help that uniqueness, that unique super secret sauce, I don't know, whatever. Know what that is, whatever you want to call it. We just need to, if we can pull on that a little bit more and let that open up and be present a little bit more in a reasonable way for leaders, especially people leaders. So that's a game changer. It's free.
You and I grew up with the phrase, cream rises to the top. Is it applicable to proficient leadership or extraordinary leadership?
Yes, in a way that, again, if organizations create enough space for people to be able to show up and figure out what that is for themselves and not force fit people into a single model.
Right.
So yes, but the cream looks different every single time.
Right. Right. And for every organization and for every leader, et cetera. So I was going to ask you, and I still should ask you about assessments for proficiency. Is there a way to assess whether or not someone has the capacity to be proficient?
Boy, you know what? I don't know. That's a good
You know
question.
what,
I
William?
really,
Damn you.
sorry about that. I don't know, and I don't know that I want to know. Like, I'm not sure that that's even a thing that I'm kind of interested in. There are things that we can do to help employees make better decisions about whether a people leadership role is the right role for them, but having an assessment to answer that for us, and particularly relying on that assessment exclusively, I don't think is the right direction to go. I mean, there's probably assessments out there, and they're great, and they're fine, and they maybe are a helpful component of a larger question.
Right.
But giving people exposure to what is it like to be a people leader if you haven't been a people leader? We don't know, right? We say, oh, we've over glamorized this thing of leading people, and it's really hard, and it's really draining a lot of the time,
Right.
especially when you were talking about large spans, or especially if you're new and in certain circumstances and high pressure work environments like healthcare, for an example. We if you've not done that work before, and all of a sudden you step into that role, and it is that kind of an environment, and you haven't had much support. Wow, no wonder people fail in that role. And so
Sure.
again, I think it kind of comes to investment. Like, we don't always invest in the right places in the right way at the right time.
Drops mic, walks off stage. Amy, thank you again. And thank you for doing part one, but also thank you for doing part two of this. I just think it's a, I mean, again, we probably do a part three, four, five, and six, and may write a book about it. But thank you so much for coming on the show today and helping us understand great leadership.
It's always such a pleasure to speak with you, William. Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. And thanks for the audience for listening. Until next time.
You've been listening to the Recruiting Live podcast by Recruiting Daily. Check out the latest industry podcasts, webinars, articles, and news at recruitingdaily.com.